Hello and welcome to JOSPT Insights, the podcast that aims to help you translate quality research to quality practice. I'm Claire Ardern, the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Orthopaedic and Sports Physical Therapy. It's great to have you listening today. Have you been scrolling the App Store wondering if there's anything worthwhile to recommend to patients? Today, we're uncovering what makes a quality app for monitoring and promoting physical activity in chronic conditions, including musculoskeletal pain. Joining me to share the latest research and discuss how to apply it in practice are exercise physiologist Dr. Alessio Bricca and physiotherapist Nikolai Noor. Alessio is an assistant professor at the University of Southern Denmark. His work is in understanding how to help patients with chronic conditions boost their physical activity using digital technology. Nikolai has a Master of Science in Exercise and Health and combines his clinical work in CrossFit and high-intensity functional training with research in digital health. Okay, here's today's episode. Dr. Alessio Bricca, Nikolai Noor, welcome to JOSPT Insights.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you.
There's an app for just about everything today, including in musculoskeletal rehabilitation and exercise therapy. And we're going to get to talking about different apps in our field of practice. You've been doing a ton of work collating and cataloging these apps and really trying to pull together what we know about how effective these apps are. But before we get there, I'd like to do a little bit of setting the scene with you, Alessio and Nikolai, because we're talking about interventions and tools that fall broadly under an umbrella referred to as digital health. I'd like to start by defining some of the terms that people might hear about or read about in digital health. So, Alessio, let's start really broad. What is digital health?
Thanks, Claire, for the question. I want to make a disclosure. And that's because I have to confess that I was never particularly fond of digital technology until the COVID pandemic hit. However, during that time, I began utilizing smartphone apps, so mHealth, to exercise at home, like many of us maybe did. And surprisingly, I found the experience to be quite positive, quite the opposite of what I had expected. And this really prompted me to explore the research surrounding digital health tools and conduct some research myself on this field. So what is digital health? Well, digital health is defined as the use of digital technologies in medicine and other health professions to manage illnesses and health risks and promote wellness. And this may include the use of wearable devices, health information technology, electronic health records, telemedicine, e-health, mHealth, virtual care, you name it. The very important thing, I think, about this definition is that we are at a pivotal moment in the digital health era, and that is because maybe we have found a definition that pleases everyone working on the field of digital health.
And there's been a lot of work from the World Health Organization in this area as well that we can alert folks to. So I think you're right that this is very much a topic that has captured the world's attention. And I'm sure that your story about using apps or discovering apps or their power during the pandemic time is going to resonate with many of our listeners. Nikolai, how have you come to digital health?
For the last 6 years, I've been working as a physical therapist. I've done work in both general practice and with athletes. I've been using some of the tools to do rehabilitation remotely. And either this is for patients who are not able to come to the clinic, or it will be as an add-on to an existing face-to-face consultation. Often this is with patients who benefit from extra attention. So this could be by the use of apps, but it could also just be as simple as a phone call. Depending on the situation, some tools offer valuable resources that extend beyond communication. So that could also be screening tools and questionnaires and ways to collect data, such as VAS pain scales, or have some functional tests that could be relevant in the rehabilitation.
I'm glad that you mentioned the simple phone call, because the temptation, I think, often is that we try to create these very complex interventions, or we always go to the more complex end of things. Sometimes the quite simple telephone call is just what is needed, or is just what the person would like and works well with their environment. And it also reminds me that digital health encompasses all things, as you mentioned, Alessio, including digital medical records. Now we're seeing emerging use of AI, artificial intelligence, and machine learning in healthcare from a delivery point of view, and also note-taking and recording. And there's lots of privacy and data sharing and data integrity concerns with those technologies. And we won't get into that today. That's a whole separate podcast. Nikolai, I want to stick with you. You alluded a little bit to how you have been using digital health in your musculoskeletal, in your physiotherapy practice. Can you expand a little bit more on that, and particularly how you choose which tool to use with which person?
I always try to see what's relevant to the patient and not see what I like to use the most. I have a story from when I was working in general practice, and I had a patient with Parkinson's disease. And he was recommended by his general practitioner, his doctor, to increase his physical activity. So this could be done by his recommendation. It could be done by increasing his step count. So he was recommended to buy a wearable watch that could count his steps. The patient started walking more, and in his mind, he increased his physical activity. However, it did not show on the wearable watch. So he was kind of disappointed with the tools, because in his mind, he figured that he actually didn't increase his physical activity. Important to note that this patient was walking with a walker. So a wrist-worn step monitor was not a good tool for this person. So I think it's important to figure out what's important to the patient in question, instead of trying to put tools on them that might not be useful in their situation. What's actually important for the patient? There are also patients who could benefit from more extended tools. So at the moment, I work more with athletes. For some of them, they have a need to sometimes communicate more often. And sometimes have it functioning very quickly, such as a chat function or as a video they can send me, and I can review them and send them some feedback. I think those needs are different, and that must be respected as a clinician.
Yeah, they're great examples. Thanks for sharing those, Nikolai. It reminds me too that there are plenty of people in our community who use things like smartwatches or the phone that's in people's pockets. Whether this is good or bad, let's not get into that. Our technology, the devices that we use every day, are collecting a lot of information about us. And certainly smartwatches are a way, if people already have access to those devices, they're already using them, building that into how you're gathering information to support your clinical decisions is a useful way of using them, I think.
Yeah, that's an important point, because if we want to collect data, we don't want to do it just for the sake of collecting it. We want to do it for something useful. So that could be in terms of goal setting, or knowing when to add a progression to the rehab, or entering a different phase of a rehab, especially the variables. Sometimes they become a little bit collecting data for the sake of collecting it.
A consensus paper has just come out setting the scene for on how to really use setting the direction for how to really use digital health in clinical practice. And they have highlighted that if we want to take a step forward and improve the way we use digital health, we should first understand the acceptability of using digital health from the patients, the feasibility of it based on the setting, context, beliefs, costs, and so on, as well as the effectiveness and cost effectiveness. We are still at the beginning on how to use effectively digital health in clinical practice, but I think that in the next few years, we will get there.
That's great. And it's nice to know that people are thinking through some of these challenges and trying to lay out a bit of a roadmap. It reminds me of a paper I read recently where they'd calculated the amount of research funding that had gone to musculoskeletal pain apps. And shockingly, to me at least, there was millions of dollars in research funding wasted because we'd put money into projects that were developing apps that then people were not using because they were sitting in the app store not being updated, or for various reasons people could no longer use those apps, or they didn't work for people. So I think your point is really well made, Alessio, that designing these tools and technologies with the community for whom they are intended is vital for ensuring that they actually do what we are intending for them to do, and that that's helpful for patients, people who are going to use them. Nikolai, I think this leads us nicely to what makes a good digital health tool, or what makes a good app? What should I look for when I'm scrolling through the app store, or a patient might come to you in the clinic and say, hey, I've seen this app. What do you think?
So I think with apps specifically, I think it should be intuitive and easy to use, related to specifically to your patient group or the population that you're doing rehab for. So where a user might find it, have some goals in mind that should be useful, maybe a developer or the engineer behind it is more focusing on the layout or the engagement of the app, which might not be super important for the user. And also for the therapist, there might be specific goals that it's nice to have that could not be relevant for the patient.
Alessio, what do you look for, and what would you recommend people look for in digital health tools?
That's a very good question. What makes a good digital health tool? Well, a digital health tool ideally is a tool that has high quality and a high potential for behavior change, which is key particularly if we want patients to maintain a healthy lifestyle in the long run. What does it mean, high quality and high potential for behavior change? And now I will give you four keywords for what it means high quality and four keywords for what it means high potential for behavior change. So let's start with the quality. And the first keyword I would like to give our listeners is engagement. So first of all, the app or the digital tool needs to be interesting, fun, customizable, and as an example, for send messages, reminders, feedbacks, and alerts to the patients about the targeted behavior. Second, functionality. It has to be easy to work. It has to be easy to learn and to use, meaning that the icons should be visible. The text should be big enough for people to read it, and so on. And it has to function well. Third, aesthetics. It has to look good. And for example, the pictures and the graphics need to be of high quality with colors that everybody can detect. And fourth keyword when it comes to the quality is that the tool should include an evidence-based content. So the content should be relevant, appropriate, coherent, and correct. And ideally, the app should come from a legitimate source. So the four keywords for the quality that clinicians should look at are engagement, functionality, aesthetics, and evidence-based. When we look at the second macro group, so the behavior change, what does it mean? It means that the app or the digital tool has to have the potential of helping the patient to improve the lifestyle, physical activity, which we know to be a key behavior for maintaining a healthy life. First of all, then, the app or the tool should provide knowledge and information about the condition, for example, the musculoskeletal conditions, low back pain, osteoarthritis, what it is, what it isn't, and so on. And it has to have the feature of allowing the recording of baseline participants' information. Then, very importantly, as also Nikolai was saying, goal setting and planning. Goal setting seems to be one of the strategies that works the best to improve a healthy behavior. So it is important that the app, in addition to having a feature of setting up goals related to the targeted behavior, also the feature of reviewing goals and updating the goals when necessary. Third, feedback and monitoring. It's important to be able to self-monitor our own behaviors. Again, this is another strategy which has been shown across conditions to improve health-related behaviors, such as physical activity. And last but not least, action. When it's not just about self-monitoring, but the tool should also help the patient to know what to do, when, and how.
That's brilliant, Alessio. Thank you. How does it work for someone who doesn't feel so comfortable using the technology?
I think this is something you need to talk openly with your patient or with your clients about. When I used to work in general practice, I would have a sheet of exercise, and I would always have this like QR code in the bottom where I could kind of navigate them towards an app that I used. And sometimes I could already tell how comfortable they were with the technology if they knew what a QR code was and if they knew how to do it. Sometimes they would already have the phones out scanning the QR code before I even showed them that function. And I think there was a higher likelihood of them using that function if they actually knew what it was. If some patients were not familiar with this or saw it more of a hassle or a feature that they were not comfortable with, they would not use that function. We shouldn't just expect to rely on these digital tools because we think they're smart. We should always keep in mind which patients we are working with and what are their actual preferences. So I don't think you should necessarily try to nudge people to use tools that they're not comfortable with, because then one should ask themselves, what would the reason for that be? Unless you have a really good reason to.
Since the pandemic, has your QR code test for digital tool comfort had to change? Because I feel like the pandemic, lots of people got very familiar with using QR codes, whether they wanted to or not. So maybe the test has to change too. Nikolai, I know you've been doing a ton of work leading a network meta-analysis in this field. I would love for you to give us a bit of a taster of what you've found. And maybe before you do, could you explain what a network meta-analysis is and why it's so helpful?
A network meta-analysis is a method of meta-analysis where you can compare more than two treatments or more than two interventions. So a traditional meta-analysis, you compare two treatments, but here you can do kind of a network of different treatments. So this was relevant in our case because we conducted a systematic review, or our coworker Graciela conducted a systematic review on digital health and related to different outcomes in patients with chronic conditions. There was a small effect, but what we also saw that when looking into a lot of these studies or RCTs performed with digital health tools, there was a very big heterogeneity in what kind of tools they used, what kind of components they had. It's a very broad umbrella term. So what we tried to do with the component network meta-analysis was firstly to separate all of the RCTs into how they were delivered. So we made an analysis based on if they were delivered with phone call, text messages, smartphone apps, wearable devices, web pages, video conference calls, or some of them had a mix of more, and then compared them to, say, each other first, but also in-person treatments. Secondly, we also compared the different type of components they included. So whereas some of them would be solely exercise, some of them could be more, incorporating self-management techniques, like Alessio talked about, with motivational interviewing, goal setting, patient education, and such. Some of them had a combination of the two. And then we had a few studies that introduced a financial incentive. And we chose to look at one outcome, which was physical activity. So in short, how effective were these different components and modes of delivery in terms of increasing physical activity? just to be transparent, I want to say that these are only preliminary results. So we have chosen to update the search before we submit it because we want this review to be as updated as possible before we submit it. I think that's the right thing to do with systematic reviews because there's always new studies coming out. We have included 137 studies in this analysis, so it's quite big. And again, this is containing not just musculoskeletal conditions, but a variation of 13 different chronic conditions. And we found out so far, it looks like the digital tool needs to have some kind of self-management to be most efficient, like Alessio talked about. And it looks like so far that the mixed interventions are most effective, and then also the smartphone apps. My own interpretation of it is that this could be related to patient preferences.
Yeah, it's like it gives people options. They choose what fits well with their life and fits well with how they like to engage with technology. I think that makes a lot of sense, Nikolai.
I think it's the complexity of it. The complexity of it is quite high. So that's also where different approaches go to different people.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an attempt to try to disentangle the complexity of digital interventions. So we will be able, I think, with this network meta-analysis to provide some useful suggestions on how to design future apps and to identify the components that we should not compromise when it comes to improving physical activity.
That's great. And we will definitely keep an eye out for the work because it sounds fantastic and really helpful. We've had a very positive focus in this chat today on digital health and the benefits and how it can help people, clinicians and patients. I think it's worth just touching on the limitations or maybe some of the things to keep in the back of your mind, downsides or potential harms that could come out of digital health technologies or tools. Alessio, what would you suggest people think about when they are choosing digital health tools?
So there are harms associated with the use of digital tools. However, we can say quite firmly that the benefits outweigh the risks of using such tools. And that's because when I talk about benefits, as Nikolai has said, well, there are improvements on physical activity, physical function, and health-related quality of life, and reduction of depression and anxiety symptoms. They are from a small to moderate extent. So it's not a panacea that resolves anything digital health, but it, as compared to not using digital health, so do nothing or just giving some information to the patients about being physically active, they provide some benefit. The downsides are that the risk of non-serious adverse events is slightly higher in those using digital health solutions that target physical activity. And that means that people with chronic conditions, such as musculoskeletal chronic conditions, might experience an increased in pain or muscle soreness after using these apps, potentially because they move more. And they consider such physiological responses to physical activities or exercise as adverse events. So it is important to educate the patients that, well, this might happen. However, the good thing is that they usually resolve without any treatment and in a couple of days. The very positive aspect is that, at least in the research we have conducted, by summarizing all the effects, benefits and harms of digital intervention, well, is that the risk of serious adverse events, so death, hospitalizations or events which require additional care, is not increased. Now, what is important to tell a patient is that that doesn't mean that if you use digital health, you won't eventually have any serious adverse events, but the risk of having such events as compared to not using this tool is not higher. Overall, yes, there are benefits And it is important to address what patients might experience as non-serious adverse events in the education when using these tools.
I think this is a lovely place for us to finish, Alessio. You and Nikolai have given us a wonderful summary of what we can look to harness in terms of benefits of digital health tools, while also keeping in mind that there are such a different range of tools. There's some key things to watch out for, and these are not panacea tools. They're not going to work for everyone either, just like any of our other interventions available at our disposal as musculoskeletal clinicians. So Dr. Alessio Bricca, Nikolai Noor, thank you for joining me on JOSPT Insights.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you.
And last but not least, I want to give a big thank you to the team that has contributed generating and disseminating the knowledge that I've presented today about digital health for managing chronic conditions, including musculoskeletal conditions. And they are Graziella Zanger, Nikolai, and Alessandro Pellegrini, and the research group FOF, led by Professor Jonas Torlund, and Progress, led by Professor Soren Skou.
Thanks for listening to this episode of JOSPT Insights. For more discussion of the issues in musculoskeletal rehabilitation that are relevant to your practice, subscribe to JOSPT Insights on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google, or your favourite podcast app. If you like JOSPT Insights, help others find us. Tell your friends and colleagues and rate and review us. To keep up to date with all the latest JOSPT content, be sure to follow us on Twitter, we're at JOSPT, and Facebook, we're JOSPT Official. Talk with you next time.